This is Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson. Casey is the president of Howard Bailey Financial and is a certified financial planner, leading retirement planning professional, as well as a published author. He is a highly sought-after speaker throughout Northeast Indiana. Marshall is the vice president of Howard Bailey Financial and is also a certified financial planner. He is a trusted voice to families all across the tri-state area. This is Retire with Purpose.
Welcome to Retire with Purpose, the science of retiring with confidence, the art of living with purpose. This is your host, Casey Weed. Joining me, my good friend and co-host, Marshall Johnson, here with me.
Hey, hey.
And we are here to discuss retirement with you. So if you're at retirement, in retirement, near retirement, or you're just seeking that coveted job optional status, you have found yourself a home. We're going to have a wide-ranging discussion today, kicking it off with a decade-by-decade guide to retirement planning. We're going to discuss gold as a safe haven, what a diversified retirement portfolio really should look like. We're also going to hit on a great article from Bloomberg, What If Stocks Don't Always Go Up? And you're not going to want to miss it. We have international poker champion, New York Times bestselling author, Maria Konnikova, coming on here later in the show. But first up, we're going to be covering an article that was in CNBC that was featured in our weekend reading for retirees and pre-retirees email series. So if you've signed up at retirewithpurpose.com with that first name and email, then you are receiving one email every week, every Friday, with four articles curated by Marshall Johnson and myself. We get in there, we get out there, we read anything and everything retirement related to sift through the garbage and deliver to you the trending topics in the retirement planning space that can impact your bottom line. Everything from the latest in investment strategies to retirement income strategies and so much more. This particular article from CNBC Guide, titled Here's a Decade by Decade Guide to Retirement Planning, we wanted to spotlight on the radio for you as you may find yourself in a certain decade of life.
Yeah.
And you're wondering, well, what does this decade mean for my bottom line? Where should my focus be during this time of my life? And this guide gave us a fair roadmap or a good starting ground with some rules of thumb that I think we should consider.
Yeah, I love the opening line of this introduction. It says, saving for retirement is the gnarliest of delayed gratification challenges.
It is.
It really is.
I'll never forget. So I was probably, I was in my mid-20s at the time. I had a friend that was in his early 40s, and I knew that he didn't save money. He never saved anything.
Sure.
And I saved as much as I possibly could. He was always poking fun and making fun of me for being as frugal as I was and not buying things that I knew I could. I was always doing this delayed gratification thing that I was taught as a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, I was always trying to put off things because I knew there was something bigger and better down the line. And he said, you know, I'm probably not even going to make it to retirement.
Yeah,
and if I do, how am I going to be able to enjoy it then? I want to enjoy it now when I'm in my 40s. Or when I'm in my 30s. And I thought, well, that is so short-sighted. I'm just waiting for you to be that person that shows up my doorsteps when you're 65 and goes, hey, can you figure out how I can retire? I've got $1,000.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, to be fair, our brains aren't hardwired that way. Our brains are not hardwired to delay gratification, to put off what we know we can have today for 30, 40, 50.
Well, it is a sign of maturity. And so we try to instill this with our kids and the way that we build their savings.
Yeah.
So we have a small allowance, you know, for their age. It's their age plus one per week. So a five-year-old's getting $6 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has three jars. He has a spend jar. Spend it on whatever you want. Go out, buy some Twizzlers. And then he has his share jar. So every year, you know, around this time of the year, we're going to go out and we're going to give back in some way. And he's going to participate in that. And then we have his savings jar. And we're saying, hey, what do you want? Right? Well, right now, he really wants a go-kart. Not just any go-kart. He wants an $800 go-kart.
Wow.
And this is
that safe?
Oh, he's going to be delaying this gratification for years.
For quite some time.
Into the future. However, we've showed him how to make money, too. So he likes to, you know, set up lemonade stands and make things and sell them. And that is such an important part of our child development.
development is learning delayed gratification. I've read child development studies that have said that is the biggest sign of maturity is when we delay gratification. So it's no coincidence that we really struggle with this in our early years, in our 20s and 30s and 40s. Unfortunately, we get better and better at delaying gratification when we need it more and more to have happened early in our life.
Right. This article points out that the greatest benefit to saving early is that compound growth. Compound interest is your friend. I always mess this up. Was it Mark Twain that said it was the eighth wonder of the world?
Or Einstein.
One of them said that. But, you know, consider ways to reduce the spending. And we're going to go through these decade by decade. But if you find yourself in one of these decades and you're not quite on track, it's really trying to understand that lifestyle creep and understand where you can get back on track.
Well, people always want to know where they're at in relation to
how
everyone
am I doing?
Else. You know, we'll have it never fails that once a week I'll meet with someone that'll say, hey, so where am I in relation to your other clients?
Yeah.
You know, not wanting to know if they're the biggest client or the smallest client. They want to know if they're doing all right.
Am I okay? Yeah.
Yeah, they want to know if they're doing good, if they're winning, right? Everybody wants to know if they're winning. And there's some good benchmarks in here. I mean, when you're in your 20s, by the end of your 20s, you get to 30, you should have 1x your annual salary saved.
Okay.
At that point in your life. However, this is a rule of thumb. So we always have to exercise a lot of caution when we talk about rules of thumb, because if you have goals of retiring when you're 30 years old, then you're going to need more than 1x your salary when you're 30 years old.
Well, it might be different too for that person that's making six figures at 20 years old. I think they're saying for the average person that's in their 20s, you know, try to save 1x your salary by the time you're out of your 20s and start with 10% of your income.
And it's all about how much you actually spend.
Yeah.
That's the number that really matters. And so when someone asks that and they're 60 years old, I say, hey, you know, you've got $500,000. You know, do you have more than the average American? Absolutely. Do you have more than the average person we meet with? No, you do not. Mm-hmm. However, you got $500,000 and you only spend $30,000 a year, and your Social Security is almost $30,000 a year. So you have more than enough.
You overfunded
versus
retirement.
The person that has $10 million and is spending almost $1 million a year, they have a problem and they've got $10 million. Mm-hmm. They needed more like $25 million in order to make this work.
Well, I think that's a great point because it does go back to spending. So these rules of thumb, 10, 20, 15% a year, it goes back to your actual spending number, and you have to really know your numbers as you get through these decades.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they talk about saving 10% of your salary here, and you always hear that. Save 10% a year. You need to save 10% a year. Now they're saying, with Social Security issues, pensions going away, maybe it's 15, 20% that you need to save. Now, I would argue in your 20s, that may not be the case.
Yeah.
In your 20s, where should you be allocating your savings every year? I believe your biggest lever in your 20s is to maximize your income.
Your income.
So what are your options to maximize that income? Somewhere along the lines of investing in yourself. Maybe that's a formal education for some. Maybe that's a trade for some. Maybe that is just getting on the grind and making some sacrifices to attend personal growth seminars, read books. You know, those are the ways that you're going to make the biggest impact. I think it's okay if you take that 10% and invest it in yourself every year rather than putting it into an IRA or some type of workplace retirement.
Yeah, you think about the 20s. You know, most people, Uncle Dave would tell us about, you know, paying down debts and making sure you don't have any debt. And I would agree, if you've got mountains of debt, you should not be saving 10% of your income. Pay down that debt first. Try to get debt free.
In your 30s, stay focused. You should have 3x your salary. In your 40s, you should be monitoring your spending and have 4x your salaries at the end of your 40s. So if you're making $100,000 a year in your 40s, you should have $500,000 saved by the time you get into your 50s. Again, just a good benchmark to get a ballpark of how you're doing. And this time in your 40s should be when you're really starting to more dial in that retirement strategy if you're looking at a traditional retirement date. So if you're looking to retire in your 60s or somewhere along those lines, this is a time for you to really start dialing in and putting together a plan. You know, it says here, you know, hop on an online retirement calculator and throw those numbers in and get an idea of where you stand. I think that's a good starting point, but many people don't realize that they could sit down with a financial planner and get an assessment of their current situation more robust than what an online calculator is going to provide, and they don't necessarily have to pay for that. You know, And in our firm, our brand DNA says, we know we can't work with everyone, but we can't help everyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just had someone that was here this past week, 45 years old. Yeah, doesn't have anything saved for retirement, right. But they want to know how they get started. We sat down with them for an hour and got them on the right track. We know that that's an investment in ourselves in multiple ways. We mm-hmm. know that that goodwill, you know, it goes along the lines of this, right? Life gives to the giver and takes from the taker. Mm-hmm. And we know if we continue to give, we will receive. And that individual that we took care of in their 40s, yeah, they're going to come back when they're in their 50s and 60s. They're going to tell their friends and family about us. Yeah, that is something I don't think you should have to pay for. You shouldn't have to sit down with an advisor and pay $1,000 for some financial plan when you're really just looking for the basics, say, at that time in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. They give some good tips along the way, like not tapping into, if you lose a job and you're out of work for a little bit, try not to tap into the savings you've already put in these 401ks. Be aware in your 40s, that's when we see a lot of lifestyle creep. And you know, your income's a little bit higher. Maybe the kids are outside of some of those expensive kid years. Be mindful of that lifestyle creep, I think, is a big one. College, don't back the truck up for college if your kids are going to a big, expensive school.
I've seen too many individuals not be able to retire when they wanted to because they funded college.
Yeah, especially expensive college or multiple years of college for multiple kids. You know, make them
and
have
it's happening
skin.
From people that actually didn't have anybody help them with college, and yet they still succeeded.
Well, and some did really well, and they didn't go to college, and now they feel like they didn't have those opportunities. They want to give it to their kids. Make sure the kids have some skin in the game. But Casey, when you get to your 50s, you know, you're nearing in on that destination. Tray tables are up, seat backs are coming forward. We're getting ready for that initial descent into retirement. We should start to be looking at income strategies.
Yeah, we need to evaluate what your income strategy is going to be. Evaluating your Social Security strategy, evaluating all those different income sources to make sure that we're on the right track. And deeper than that, we should be talking about tax planning at the same time so you don't get into your 60s and realize that everything that you've ever saved isn't some tax-deferred 401k and you're retiring with a whole nother loan. You paid off your mortgage, but now you owe Uncle Sam on one of your largest retirement assets. In your 60s, you're saying, how much should I have saved? You know, the article goes to share about 10 times your salary at that point in your time. That, again, it's a rule of thumb. I do not like using rules of thumb when you're this close. If you're in your 60s, you should know to the penny exactly what you need as you step into retirement and really start putting together a truly comprehensive retirement plan that's going to cover all of your bases. It's no longer about investing. It's no longer about getting the highest return you can every single year. Now you have enough, and it becomes about protecting those dollars and ensuring that they last a lifetime. It's more about focusing on those liabilities, those major risks that you're going to face as you transition into retirement, whether that be your traditional emergencies, whether that be market crashes, longevity risk, whether that be inflation or taxes rising in the future, long-term care, healthcare risk. We need to make sure all those things are covered so that you can focus on where life is actually happening. It's happening right now as you're listening to this. We believe that you deserve a secure and independent retirement, which is why we're offering a complimentary financial review for the next 10 callers. Meet with an independent financial advisor on our team, either in person or through a video meeting from the comfort of your home, and we'll help you determine how prepared you are to handle retirement pitfalls like inflation, healthcare emergencies, stock market crashes, and taxation. In short, we'll take the guesswork out of financial planning for you. It can take just 30 minutes. You don't even have to leave your home, or you can meet with us in the privacy of our office. So for the next 10 callers to call right now at 866-482-9559, a comprehensive financial review at no obligation. 866-482-9559. We'll be right back after the short break with questions from you.
You're listening to Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson. This is Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson.
Welcome back to Retire with Purpose, the science of retiring with confidence, the art of living with purpose. This is your host, Casey Weed. Joining me, my good friend and co-host, Marshall Johnson, here with me to answer questions from you. So if you have questions, we have answers. Just go on over to retirewithpurpose.com. In the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, it says, ask Casey a question. That's legit. Type your question in right there. Anything that's been keeping you up at night, anything that's on your mind right now about the future, or maybe mistakes you've made in the past, maybe your financial advisor told you something recently, you go, I don't know if that's quite true. Go ahead, retirewithpurpose.com, drop it right there in the box. We'll get you an answer. And if you'd like that question to be featured on the show, we'll do it right here for you, like we did for Brian in Marion, Indiana. Brian says, why is gold considered a safe haven when in and of itself it generates no asset growth or revenue stream?
Brian, that is a great question. I don't consider gold a safe haven. I consider it a crisis hedge. I think gold tends to elevate during times of uncertainty and panic, and when people are really just looking for something that's uncorrelated to the stock market or the bond market. That's where you're going to find some safe haven, if you will.
I mean, it is a safe haven, right?
I mean,
you said you don't consider it a safe haven. I want to understand.
Yeah, so I don't consider it a safe asset. How about that? It's a highly volatile.
Yeah, there we go.
It's a highly volatile commodity, right? Gold is a commodity.
That is not safe any more than Bitcoin.
Yeah, that is not safe, but it's something that's not correlated directly to the market. So oftentimes it's a crisis hedge. Some people look at gold like it's an inflation hedge. You know, you could put about 6-7 different things that are ahead.
How many people have you seen lose money in gold?
A lot of money too.
Yeah.
And so, but like I would say about Bitcoin, if it's something that interests you, it is perfectly acceptable to be a portion of your asset mix. Maybe that's 5-10% of your overall net worth.
Max.
I personally just don't want to load the boat on gold or Bitcoin or anything that's alternative.
I don't own any physical gold. Well, I have a couple coins, right? They were handed down, but that's it.
Sure.
As far as physical gold goes, I've got some gold ETF exposure.
Yeah.
That's just diversification, as you said, you know, in some of my investment allocations. But I'm not a big fan of gold, especially. I think most people are buying gold because they say, hey, yeah, the world's going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, and it's a crisis.
You know, if that's the case, you know, I'm more of an ammo owner.
Yeah,
right?
Guns,
go ahead. Give me 1,000 rounds. Give me 10,000 rounds. I saw this drum the other day of it was I think it was 15,000 rounds of 223, and it was $7,000. And I thought, boy, if it came down to the 15,000 rounds of 223 or the $7,000 gold bar over here, I'm taking the ammo.
Yeah, I'd take the ammo
all
too.
Day. I get to have fun with it too, rather than just sitting around. You know, gold makes a really good gift for a spouse. You get some equity out of it in that relationship.
Spousal equity,
But I'm really with Warren Buffett on this one. You know, Warren said, and you know, gold is limited in supply. It is a commodity. You know, that is why there is potential for growth there. There's a limited supply of it on this planet.
Sure.
So limited is that all of the gold that has been mined on the planet Earth would fit into 3 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Mm.
Okay? 3 Olympic-sized swimming pools. And Warren Buffett said a number of years ago on a CNBC interview that I caught, he said, yeah, rather than owning those 3 Olympic-sized swimming pools that I couldn't even swim in, it would hurt if I tried, I would rather take...
Scrooge McDuck.
He said, if I could afford that, I'd just take all of that wealth and I could buy all the farmland in the United States.
Yeah.
And I think he said like 7 ExxonMobils.
Well, it was 3 Exxon,
three ExxonMobils,
but now with the price down from when he said that, he could probably get like 7.
Now we can get more ExxonMobils. And he said that because all of those assets, as you said, Brian, they produce an income stream.
Right.
They produce an income stream and there's a real need. Yeah, there is...
Yes.
Some industrial, there's quite a bit of industrial use for gold, but it's not as permanent as a piece of farmland, right?
No.
That farmland is going to be around forever. It's extremely limited. We're always going to need a place to either grow crops or live.
That's why some people will say gold is not an investment, right? It doesn't produce a yield. It doesn't produce a dividend. It's a store of value.
So far, right?
And it's like, I'm not anti-gold bug. I'm just not a gold bug. So I think it's okay for some. Just be careful. Don't let your husband put all of your IRA into gold.
You sound like you've heard something
I've seen that. I've seen that. So next up, we've got, thanks, Brian. Next up, we got Marianne in South Bend, Indiana. She says, Casey, in your opinion, what does a well-diversified retirement portfolio look like? Is it 100% gold? No, I'm just kidding. She didn't say that. How would I know if I'm taking on too much risk?
You know, I think to me, this is not a question that you can answer for you specifically, because this is going to look different for everyone. Diversification on your way to retirement is all about accumulation, because you're looking at a variety of different asset classes and tax buckets in that situation. You know, say 50 individual stocks and some real estate and some savings, some insurance, et cetera. However, once you actually get to retirement, you're not diversifying for that specific purpose. You're not diversifying for asset growth. You're not diversifying to get enough. You already have enough. Now diversification is based on your risks. And so you are first taking a look at the number one risk that all retirees will face: liquidity, right? So we need some liquid funds for emergencies. Do you have enough? We should have at least 6 months of our expenses allocated someplace liquid. Is your income strategy such that it won't be impacted by the market? You know, you have $1 million and you spend $100,000 a year. We want to have 50,000 of that over in that liquidity bucket, the cash money market, and you need, say, $300,000 in your income bucket that can guarantee enough income to supplement your Social Security and pension, take care of all your income needs in retirement. Then you set some funds aside in investments for long-term growth to provide flexibility to adapt to things like inflation. Mm-hmm. And then you have what's left over that's going to take care of those long-term care needs, allocate it to a long-term care type product or something along those lines. And then everything else is set aside for your heirs and leveraged in the best way we possibly can for that. So there's specific tools for each one of those things, right? You've got life insurance, long-term care, you've got banks, you've got annuities, you have traditional investments, individual stocks or ETFs. Yeah. You have a truly diversified strategy. Now, if you are in retirement and all you have are stocks and bonds, that is not a diversified strategy. You no longer have true diversification because you cannot meet all of your needs. If that bucket loses 20%, where you're going to go for emergencies or income. If you have a major long-term care need, you cannot go to that bucket to solve that major long-term care need. Again, everybody's unique, so that allocation, that diversification is going to look a little bit different for everyone, but that's going to help you answer that question: do I have a diversified retirement portfolio? And then number two, am I taking too much risk? I like to use a simple acronym for that: capacity, attitude, and need. Can I take the risk? So do you have the capacity to take the risk? Well, have you taken care of those basic needs? Yeah. Do you have enough liquidity? You have enough income? You have your health care taken care of?
Yeah, can you afford to lose something? Can you handle the risk?
And then do you have the attitude? Mm-hmm. So many people found that they didn't have the attitude come March. They thought they did when the market was skyrocketing forward, but when March hit and their portfolios took a hit, they said, oh, wow, I need to sell. Mm-hmm. And they panicked. You don't have the attitude. Then do you have the need for the risk? If you have enough, say, for retirement that you could bury it in the backyard and it lasts the rest of your life, you don't have the need.
Right.
So we'd prefer you have all three of those, the capacity, attitude, and the need, but we want to see that you have at least two out of three.
At least two out of three. Yeah, I think that's a great acronym: capacity, attitude, and need, and then spend some time understanding what your required rate of return is. You know, we can take a look at somebody's savings, we can take a look at their life expectancy, and we can back into a required rate of return. How much do you need to make? If it's 2 or 3%, then you probably don't need to take a whole lot of risk. But if that number is 8, 10, 12% a year, then yes, you need to take a little bit more risk or save longer, continue to extend your working career to account for that. So understanding need, I think, is a big part of that.
Next question is from Glenn. How can I best allocate the money that will be left behind when I'm no longer living? I'm enjoying the fruits of my labor now, but have no children to pass any remaining sum along to when the time comes. I know there's always charities, churches, etc., but where do I begin in deciding?
Boy, I think, Glenn, you got to spend some time kind of looking at the man in the mirror, right? What do you care how the money's allocated when you're gone, because you're no longer there? You know, what is important to you? What are the things in your life that you would like to see benefit from you not being around? I think that's where I would start that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, this is something that I've pondered quite a bit myself. I have a mentor of mine that is, you know, is extremely wealthy, and we had this conversation recently, and he sent me a book. So if you are a religious man, I would encourage you to check out the book God and Money, How We Discovered True Riches at Harvard Business School. I'll say I'm just getting into that, but I have a lot of respect for the individual that sent me that book. So I'd strongly recommend you check that book out if you are a Christian. You know, you could also check out a podcast that we're getting ready to release here in a couple weeks with Phil Kubeta, who is the advisor of philanthropy, or the philanthropy chair at the American College. He runs the CAP program, which is a designation for advisors that are working with people through charities. And I would encourage you to maybe even check out the Community Foundation. I found your local Community Foundation to be a great resource to help guide you in the right direction, especially for those individuals that don't have children. They can help set up structures that operate much like a more expensive family foundation, however, with much less cost. And you don't have to worry about having children, say, to run that foundation moving forward. So I'd encourage you to check out your local Community Foundation and act now. So someone that's in this situation has the opportunity to pay so much less in taxes if they make this decision sooner rather than later, and you don't have to make it in whole. You could use things like donor-advised funds to make your charitable contributions year over year and do it in a lump sum, dole it out over years.
Get some tax benefits.
There's charitable remainder trusts, which I have found incredibly helpful for individuals in your situation, where you get income for the rest of your life, and then whatever's left in the trust passes on to charity when you pass away, but you get a tax deduction today that you can use against your taxable income. So you've got some great opportunities out there, Glenn. I hope you check out that podcast, and I hope you find what you're looking for. If you have questions like Brian, Marianne, Glenn, then please go to retirewithpurpose.com, throw your question right in there, and we will get you an answer. If you're ready to get a personalized answer to that unique question of yours, we're offering a complimentary financial review for the next 10 callers right now. You'll meet with an independent financial advisor from our team, either in person or through a video meeting from the comfort of your home, and we'll help you determine how prepared you are to handle retirement pitfalls like inflation, healthcare emergencies, stock market crashes, and taxation. In short, we're here to take the guesswork out of financial planning for you. It can take just 30 minutes. You don't even have to leave your home, or you can meet with us in the privacy of our office. So for the next 10 callers to call right now, 866-482-9559, a comprehensive financial review at no obligation. 866-482-9559. After this short break, international poker champion Maria Konnikova.
You're listening to Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson. This is Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson.
Welcome back to Retire with Purpose, the science of retiring with confidence, the art of living with purpose. This is your host, Casey Weed. Joining me, my good friend and co-host, Marshall Johnson, and another very special guest here today. We have Maria Konnikova. So who is Maria Konnikova? You've probably heard that name before as an award-winning journalist, a regular contributor to The New Yorker. Most recently, she published her New York Times bestselling book, The Biggest Bluff, of which we're going to be giving away here shortly. So stick around for that. That particular book, we focused a good part of our conversation on invaluable life and financial lessons that we can learn from the game of poker. How to handle the bad cards that come our way and maintain our focus on how we play them. Prior to writing that book, Maria knew nothing about poker, believe it or not. She didn't even know how many cards were in a deck, but she ended up becoming an international poker champion and winner of over $300,000 in tournament earnings, which would be much more than that if it wasn't for COVID. She has stepped out of the tournament circle for now, but she plans to get back into it after she's able to, at what point she's actually able to sit back down at a table, which is what she really enjoys.
I look forward to this conversation. I've caught bits and pieces of this interview while you were doing it live, and I think she was a lot of fun.
Yeah, this was actually done on the Retire with Purpose podcast. This will be released as episode number 188 in the not too distant future. However, if you already liked our Facebook page, you would have had the opportunity to catch me do this interview with Maria live and present your own own unique questions. So those of you that like our Facebook page, you get the impromptu opportunity to present your questions to our guest. Those of you that have signed up for Weekend Reading for Retirees get a preemptive email where we ask you to submit your questions, and I will present those questions to our guests. One of those questions had to do with how thinking like a poker player can help with investment decisions. And this is what Maria had to say.
I think that it forces you to actually evaluate the bets that you're making much more thoroughly and to figure out, you know, if my reason is good, right? If my decision process was good, if I actually was thinking through the things correctly, then the outcome, what's happening at any given moment, shouldn't matter, right? If I'm still sure of my thesis, if I'm still sure of the elements that were my core elements, then I should not change my decision because of what's happening right now in the markets. That's the equivalent of suffering a bad beat in poker and then saying, oh, I'm never going to do that again. No, you have to do it again and again and again, because if you were a 75% favorite, you're going to lose 25% of the time, and you have to have the stomach to keep going, because that 25% can hurt and it can happen over and over because probability does not follow a normal distribution. And so what you have to do is just keep making that same decision. So in investing, it helps you from overtrading, which is a huge, huge problem that investors have. So Danny Kahneman, who won the Nobel Prize for economics, the only psychologist to ever do that, has worked a lot with investors and has found that even though they think that they're poker players, they're really gamblers. So they more resemble people who play roulette than people who play poker, because they don't actually focus on the process. They instead are so anchored to the outcome that they end up locking in losses and, you know, and not realizing all of the gains and just being way too emotional.
So that last line was why I wanted to feature this and highlight this on the radio show for my interview on the Retire With Purpose podcast with Maria Konnikova, because how many times you hear someone say, oh, I'm an investor, when really they're gamblers, right? They are not investors. They're gamblers because they're not following a process. And this took me back to my college days when I was in an investment competition. I win first place in the investment competition and just crushed everyone, right? And I end up with a C. I went, how can I get first place here? And the professor's going to turn around and give me a C. I was irate. And in hindsight, she was right. I never followed a process for those decisions. And it could have went a very different direction, of which we've seen many individual investors come to us after they thought, hey, I'm an investor, I'm doing a great job. And then all of a sudden they get burnt and they say, yeah, maybe I shouldn't do this anymore.
Yeah. And I love how she pointed out that things don't follow a normal distribution, right? The results don't follow a normal distribution. You can have five bad hands in a row. And the next article in our next segment that we're going to talk about talks about those 25%, those losses. Those are hard to stomach, but in certain instances, you need to be able to play through them.
You know, she also wrote a really interesting book on con artists, everything from street cons to largely cons in the financial world. And I wanted to ask her, you know, about that. You know, why is it that people continue to get scammed one after another? So if you've been scammed once, your odds of getting scammed again are very, very high.
Really?
And she wrote a book called The Confidence Game. It's a really interesting book. I encourage you to check it out. But this is where she shares with us the psychology behind con artists and being scammed.
This is so such an important point. Ego. I keep saying ego. Our ego gets us into so much trouble. So people refuse to believe that they could have been conned. And so they go through so many logical, intellectual hoops to try to rationalize why it wasn't a con that they just become primed. They think that they can see through it next time. They think that they can actually win. And so it turns out that one of the best predictors of whether someone will be a victim of a con is whether they've already been a victim of a con. If the answer is yes, then you're golden. Go ahead and con them. They're going to fall for it again. In fact, con artists will have these things called suckers lists, where they actually, you can pay money for lists of individuals who've fallen for telephone scams or, you know, IRS scams or this or that. And people will pay a lot of money for that list because these are the best victims. Because out of a different combination of factors, whether it's wounded ego or pride or just not wanting to admit that you could get conned, or just all of these things that you've done to rationalize away what happened and convince yourself that either you can see through it or that it wasn't a con to begin with.
Wow. Yeah.
That's just one of those pieces of just behavioral bias. And you con yourself too, right? Due to your ego or your pride, you look back on your investment mistakes and you rationalize a way to say, well, you know, I would have never done that. That's not my fault. You know, and you find a way to put blame somewhere else rather than taking that responsibility. And then you tend to do it again and again and again. You put good money after bad, right? And we see this when people buy a particular stock, they fall in love with that stock, it loses value, and they just keep throwing money at it. And then it goes to zero. You know, we have to be very cautious of our ego when it comes to investing.
Yeah, we have to understand our limitations. I think that's a big fallacy. Many people, and you mentioned it earlier, a lot of people look at the stock market like they're gambling, and that is just not, there's a difference between investing and gambling.
Yeah, if you're following a process. I mean, there are people trading in the stock market that are gambling, and then there's others that are investing, and it really does pay to know the difference, and staying away from your ego can really help you with that. And leading along with that, I wanted to follow up with a question to Maria Konnikova about some that have overly high expectations. Now, I'll have every once in a while, we'll have someone come in and say, hey, you know, I want 8% a year, but I don't want any risk. They'll say, hey, this guy told me that, you know, he could guarantee me 10% a year. This gal told me she'd guarantee me 7% a year. I saw an ad the other day said that I could get 9% a year. Yeah, they want these really high fixed rates or really high returns without any risk. And I said, what would you say to someone that comes in and says, I want a guaranteed 8%?
You say, look, the reason I'm saying that I can't guarantee this is because nobody can. And actually be prepared. Show them as much data in as compelling a way as you possibly can, and try to explain it without condescending, not being like you're an idiot. Be like, look, you know, here's historically, let's look at the people who've guaranteed 8%. Bernie Madoff. That's the type of person who can guarantee that type of return. Now let's look at kind of these best funds. Yeah, this one sometimes went way over 8%, but you know what? It had years when it was negative. Actually show them and talk through what you know that they don't know. And then I would also go a step further and say, and anyone who promises you otherwise is lying. And I hope you understand why. And I really do, you know, I have your best interests at heart. If someone ever says I can guarantee you 8% every single year, run away.
I followed up with my final question for Maria, which is, hey, you know, one thing you might be interested in know, Maria's husband is in the investment industry. And so I wanted to ask her, you know, what is the most important element one should seek to find in a financial planner?
Have someone who listens to you and who listens to your goals, because everyone has different goals when it comes to investing. Is my goal to retire in 10 years? Well, that's a very different investment strategy from, you know, if I'm in my 20s and I have no desire to retire for 40 years, right? I can take much more risk if I'm in my 20s than I can when I'm in my 50s, because bigger risks, bigger rewards, bigger gains. But if I'm someone who's looking, who has a fixed date, this is when I retire, this is how long I have, all of a sudden, you know, different strategies are going to be effective. And so someone needs to listen to you. There's no one size fits all. And a lot of times advisors don't truly listen because they think they know better than you. So as an advisor, never think you know better than your client what they want. Listen to what they're actually trying to tell you.
So I was recently featured on a podcast, The Lifestyle Investor, with my good friend Justin Donald, who just launched his new book, Lifestyle Investor, and just launched his new podcast. And we were having this conversation about risk and things that I have learned over time. When I first got in this business of being a financial planner, delivering financial advice, I thought it was my job to deliver financial advice. That's what I'm supposed to do, tell you what you're supposed to do with your money. And, you know, going through financial education from financial classes and from my financial degree to going through your CFP courses, your CHEFC courses, you know, all of these academic programs, you say, okay, well, I should just be able to take their information on a sheet of paper, plug it in. I can tell them exactly what they should be doing with their life savings, but everybody's different. Everybody thinks differently about their life savings. You know, my dad is one of those who I talked to about an investment opportunity not long ago, and he said, yeah, I could make more, but yeah, just make me 4% and I'll be okay. You know, he should be, right, by the textbook, taking some risk with his life savings. However, he just chooses to not do that because it gives him peace of mind. And he's at a stage in his life where he says, I don't need any more. I just need to not lose it. So just give me a decent rate of return and everything will be okay. So everybody is unique. If you're interested in listening to more of our conversation with Marina Konnikova, I would encourage you check out retirewithpurpose.com where you'll be able to listen to the full length podcast episode. That'll be episode number 188. When it's released, you can catch it now on our Facebook page, Howard Bailey Financial. And we have a special offer for you. We partnered up with Marina Konnikova to offer her New York Times bestselling book, The Biggest Bluff, How I Learned to Pay Attention, Master Myself, and Win. If you found Maria's discussion here insightful and want to dip a little bit deeper, this book walks you through her journey to becoming an international poker champion and how the concept of skill, luck, and chance in the game of poker can also teach us many lessons in everyday life and investing. Maria generously sent over a box of books to us, and we're going to be giving them away until they're all gone. So call right now at 866-482-9559, 866-482-9559, to claim your complimentary copy of The Biggest Bluff by Maria Konnikova. Next up, what if stocks don't always go up?
First-time callers are eligible to receive one in-stock book per request. Limit one book per week per household up to three books per calendar year. See full terms at howardbailey.com/terms. You're listening to Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson. This is Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson.
Welcome back to Retire with Purpose, the science of retiring with confidence, the art of living with purpose. This is your host, Casey Weed. Joining me, my good friend and co-host, Marshall Johnson, here with me. And we are going to be talking about stonks. Stonks?
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 Stonks always go up.
What if stonks don't always go up? This is an article that came from our weekend reading for retirees email series. So an email goes out every single Friday from myself to you that keeps you on top of trending topics in the retirement planning space. Could be what's going on in the stock market. It could be investment strategies, income strategies, tax planning strategies, things that will impact your bottom line in retirement, all designed to help you make better decisions at that stage in your life. You can go to retirewithpurpose.com and sign up. While you're there, check out the full-length podcast we did on this article. So we did a full-length podcast where we go a little bit deeper than we're able to go here on the radio show. Just click the podcast tab, and that'll be one of the more recent podcasts that are out there. So what if stocks don't always go up? This is, it says advice for millennials. The U.S. stock market could be headed for a lost decade. Here's what to do. I don't know why. I mean, honestly, I don't know why this is directed towards millennials. I think millennials are probably in the best position of anyone to be able to go through a lost decade in stonks. but I think we do have to question the reality of stocks only going up, right? Stocks only go up. Stocks only go up. And stocks never go down. Stocks always come back. That can be extremely dangerous advice, you know, particularly not for millennials, particularly for someone that's retired.
Yeah, well, and I think he references millennials because he starts talking about sports blogger turned day trader Dave Portnoy of Barstool fame, who famously here over the quarantine, over the summer, you know, he was locked down, couldn't do anything. So he turned to day trading and then he live streamed it like the whole day long. Like, this is a guy who creates content. And when the whole world was shut down, he had to find a new way to be entertaining and create content. So he started day trading. And it was like, you know, from that point going on, the market went on a raging, you know, recovery. And he made the famous quote, you know, stonks only go up. And he's right. You know, in the short term, millennials, you know, if they started saving it, and think about Robinhood and all the apps and all the the stimulus, all the stimulus from the CARES Act, a ton of it went into the market.
If you've only been paying attention or you've only started investing since 2009, it does feel like the stock market only goes up. It can never go down. It just continues to go up year after year. And that's something called recency bias. Mm-hmm. What's happened most recently tends to be what you expect to happen next and in the future. However, that's not always the case. We know that's not always the case. We've faced decades on end where the stock market has not gone up over time. You have to challenge that belief. You know, one of the things that we often talk about, and you often hear, you know, in the financial media, hey, the stock market averages 8% or 10% or 6%. Mm-hmm. You know, those averages do have an origin. The stock market's averaged between 6 and 10% over the last 100 years. Okay, the last 100 years, it's averaged 6 to 10%. It just depends on if you're looking at a 10-year rolling period, a 30-year rolling period, and they have to be rolling periods because there have been periods of time, decades even, where the stock market has not returned anything to investors over those extended periods of time. And that can be incredibly painful. The stock market does not make 6, 10% linearly. It is and has been a bit of a roller coaster ride. However, you could have just been throwing darts like a monkey at the Wall Street Journal over the last decade and done pretty darn good.
Yeah, I think
Like Dave even did.
You know, he got his Scrabble letters out and he just started mixing letters up and he was investing in those stocks. And for a while there, it was working pretty good. But, you know, I think it's worth mentioning there was a lost decade because up until the lost decade, you know, that's what brokers would say. Like, look, put your money in stocks. You might have a few bad years, but you've never had a down decade. And then we had the lost decade. And so I think it's worth referencing here that, hey, at some point we may have another lost decade.
Well, and the argument made in the article is that we may be close to that, if not already there. By some metrics, stocks today, especially large cap stocks in the United States, are by some metrics the most expensive that they've ever been. And so you have to start asking that question, what if they don't always go up? What's that look like? Yeah, and right now we've had a fantastic period of returns after returns in the U.S. stock market. That might soon be followed by a prolonged hangover. And the standard advice to just put your money in an index fund that tracks the market and forget about it might not work so well. And I do feel that a lot of millennials have really bought into that. We've got a lot of bogleheads out there. A lot of individuals in the FIRE movement today. I had one of the critiques of my book, Job Optional. I had someone say, a lot of great information in there, good stories, very interesting. However, it really overcomplicates the process. You could just throw everything in an index fund and everything's going to work out fine. Just throw everything in the S&P 500 index fund and everything's going to work out just fine. That's somebody that started investing in 2009. That's somebody that doesn't know the real history of the stock market and the other risks that face retirees outside of just the stock market.
Yeah. And I think,
that one burned a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good to take your criticism too. Cause I mean, you can make a point that if you are a millennial, like I don't even care if the market goes down or it's flat for 12 years, right? Like keep investing though.
Especially if you're continuing to invest your dividends.
If you're dollar cost averaging, you're reinvesting your dividends.
Yeah.
It can still work. But if we're in the FIRE movement, if you're financially independent retire early, you can't just throw it all in the S&P 500.
Now you're looking at a 60-year retirement, some of these people, right, that are retiring in their 20s and 30s.
And they might be stretched so thin that they need 10, 12% rates of return. So you've got a double-edged sword there. But most retirees have lived this, right? The people that are calling, here recently with some of the uncertainty around the markets, and they felt the pain in March, right? And they might have been taking on too much risk. And now as they're nearing retirement, maybe they're a year away or a year into retirement, they're going, wait a minute. I remember what the dot-com bubble was like. Yeah. I remember what 2008 was like.
Well, I think we had a little reality check here recently. I mean, the last
was a break
decade.
Check? Was it a financial break check?
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that's what it felt like. You got a little whiplash
that's
there.
That's what I do to Grady when he doesn't put on his seatbelt fast enough. I give him a little
You just give him a little
He puts that seatbelt back on,
Maybe we shouldn't put that on the air. CPS can be knocking on your door.
I mean, we're going like half a mile an hour.
Okay.
It's not going to hurt himself.
That's what I'm saying. You got to give the full deal. details.
You got context.
You tell a story about that. A little context.
Crashing up against the dashboard.
The S&P 500's returned about 13% a year after reinvesting dividends over the last decade. You know, even what happened, it's like, so we get hit by the fastest bear market in history. Then we have this fastest recovery in history, and we're hitting new highs.
It's like, they do always go up.
Yeah, it feels like, wow, it always goes up. You know, because the Federal Reserve just rode to our rescue here. You know, are they going to be able to do that forever? I think this is, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime retiree's opportunity to go, okay, I got back quickly.
Yeah, let's reset.
And we've been talking to some of our podcast guests about this, too. You know, individuals that are in retirement or were near retirement, I should say, that got laid off here recently are going, oh, well, I'm laid off, can't get another job, and you know, my portfolio is recovered. Maybe I should go ahead and lock in this situation and make sure everything's okay, so we don't, in case we end up like one of the other markets around the globe.
Yeah, yeah. You talk about the FTSE 100, you know, Britain's preeminent pharmaceutical, engineering, mining, consumer goods. It tracks those companies in price, and they're lower now than they were two decades ago. Yeah. The same can be
20
said.
20 years and no return.
Yeah, you could. And that's not fair. I mean, there was returns. It hit higher highs, and now it's right back down to where it was, you know, 20 years ago. And the same's true with the stock Europe 600, the MSCI. You know, you can look at all these.
The Nikkei is probably.
Oh, my gosh.
The one that is discussed, you know, more than anything else. Japan's stock market index still 40% below its peak in 1989. We're talking 30 years.
In what was the problem in Japan? Overspending, aging population. Ah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, it sounds very familiar. And there are things that you can do, though. And I want to also say, you know, some big names out there that I really have a lot of respect for that are, you know, ringing the warning bell right now. GMO's Jeremy Grantham, billionaire Ray Dalio, Bridgewater,
Ray.
Which I just got done reading his book. Fantastic. Blackstone's vice chairman, Tony James, all of them have warned about a lost decade for equity investors. If you're just buying and holding an index fund, you might want to pay close attention to some of the guidance that's delivered in this article.
Yeah, they talk about extreme valuations. Be aware of the extreme valuations. Be aware of what bubbles create and how they pop. Ultra low interest rates. I mean, Casey, we can't talk about it enough. I feel like we talk about it every 5 minutes. Ultra low interest rates and no sign of those being raised. The Fed can't afford to raise interest rates at this point, and that's a little bit like Japan as well.
Well, and if you want to go through all the different reasons that are laid out in the article, check out retirewithpurpose.com, sign up for weekend reading. We can send you this particular article, but those solutions are, one, unfortunately, to save more, which, you know, for me, that means invest in yourself. Figure out ways to increase your income. That'll be the easiest way for you to save more rather than cutting more and more out of your budget, and invest in international equities. And have they performed well lately? No, but I've been saying, you know, those are the asset classes that will outperform the future. You know, we need to make sure that we're staying invested in those areas that are currently down, because that's a sign that they're going to have better opportunity in the years to come. And John Hussman said this. He said, it's exactly when past returns are most glorious that future prospects are most dismal. So what I'm saying is that works in the inverse at the same time. Other opportunities, tactical money management always outperforms during volatile bear markets. Those are money managers that are actually not just buying and holding index funds, but strategically managing that portfolio with a process, indexed products, using products that give you a portion of the market's gains and lock in those gains periodically, so you don't have to worry about losing them the next time the market pulls back. Looking into tax alpha, I'll say one of the guaranteed ways that you can get yourself some returns is do better tax planning, and that can put more money in your pocket where it belongs. And think about real estate. Think about passive income. Look into areas where you can continue to invest and find opportunities outside of the stock market as well as inside the stock market. You need to stay truly diversified. If you're ready to explore what this means to your bottom line, we're offering a complimentary financial review for the next 10 callers. Meet with an independent financial advisor on our team, either in person or through a video meeting from the comfort of your home, and we'll help you determine how prepared you are to handle retirement pitfalls like inflation, healthcare emergencies, stock market crashes, and taxation. In short, we'll take the guesswork out of financial planning for you. And it can take just 30 minutes. You don't even have to leave your home, or you can meet with us in the privacy of our office. So for for the next 10 callers to call right now, 866-482-9559, a comprehensive financial review with no obligation. 866-482-9559. We'll be right back right here next week on Retire with Purpose.
You've been listening to Retire with Purpose, hosted by Casey Weed and Marshall Johnson. Investment advisory services offered through Howard Bailey Securities, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Working with Howard Bailey Securities, LLC cannot guarantee investment success or that specific financial goals will be achieved. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP and Certified Financial Planner in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. Howard Bailey Financial is a registered trademark of Howard Bailey Financial. All rights reserved. Information is not intended to provide specific legal or tax advice. Howard Bailey Financial nor its advisors are qualified to give tax or legal advice. You are encouraged to consult with your tax or legal professional for guidance on your individual situation. This radio show is a paid placement.